first meeting of the new year on January 31st. And we have a whole agenda for our meeting today, but we do have a quorum, and so the first thing we will do are the minutes from November 9th and 10th meetings. Would someone move those minutes? November 9 and 10. Any additions or corrections? Maybe you're grateful we can look at those if you haven't had a chance yet. Associates, and Brian Weiss. Gary Martin, Frank Sontag. On January 19th, the great thought upon the language is that we have in front of us. It has been confirmed by the SBI Howard Becker. It's totally the salaries Fairmont Place Relief Association and the parent. They have using the same model as used with the 2011 special session, Minneapolis Police and Fire Relief Association, consolidations and terminates relief association upon consolidation. The language repeals the Fairmont Police Relief Association's specific statutes and special laws. The Fairmont Police Relief Association is the last of Minnesota's 48 local police and state firefighter relief associations. As of 1980, they have totally consolidated in Fairmont. The sole remaining local relief association similar to Fairmont Police Association is the Bloomington Firefighters Relief Association. The Bloomington Firefighters Relief Association is not a completely comparable situation to the 48 local police and paid fire associations, and has no indicated interest in changing its retirement coverage in favor of para retirement plan and no adverse precedent appears likely to result. So, members, that basically says what we want to do. We want to cease the Fairmont Police Association and join Terry.
Thank you. You have a number of people I want to do anything about as well. Please identify yourself for the record and the record. My name is Tim Darling. I'm the city administrator for the city of Fairmont. We think that city should manage cities and let the professionals at PPRA manage our police retirement for us. We're down to 9 active members and 4 surviving widows. Fairly small plan, but as you all know, all the requirements and everything that go along with managing the pension fund are becoming more and more complex. The Association Board met back in September and passed a resolution requesting that we attempt to get this consolidation completed. All of the members were notified, and after they had a chance to ask any questions, it was supported by all of the members, and the City Council has since passed a resolution similar in nature. So everybody involved from the City of Fairmont standpoint is supportive of moving forward.
Bob Rice. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian Rice, I'm the attorney for the Fairmont Police Relief Association. And after last year's special session, I advised Fairmont that Minneapolis would consolidate and explain the terms of the legislature for the consolidation. We initiated a conference with Mr. Fowling, who's the city administrator in Fairmont. We brought him in, Mr. Myers, the actuary for the Relief Association. And basically, undertook an analysis to see under what conditions Fairmont could consolidate with PRA. And looking at the numbers, basically, there could be the members of the Relief Association would be willing to give up their current escalated pension, which is tied to the top rate salary of the police officer in Fairmont, and includes all benefits, including health insurance increases and a 13th check. In exchange for going to a pension at $264,000 a year, starting effective upon consolidation. Looking at these numbers, basically there are enough assets in the Fairmont Police Relief Association to pay that level of benefit, assuming current market conditions. The city has agreed to, like Minneapolis's case, should the legislature is recommended as the legislature adopt a change in the interest rate assumption, Fairmont would be responsible for making up any differential that that would cause in terms of CRA's financial requirements. It would be a full consolidation. And with our city of Fulmer, put there in the members' benefits going forward would be tied to whenever they open up and increase the tariff payout throughout the state. So I think every council member would look at it, explain the trade-offs, their board, which has got a majority of Greenup Association members supporting it, for members who are advised, as Mr. Donnelly said, we vote for no concern for any individual members. And given that this is the last of 48 freestanding Greenup Associations, I think it's consistent with the commission policy, and it makes financial sense for the city and for members to do. So we would request this commission support of the legislation. Mr. Meyer is here. Are there any questions related to the actuarial information? This actuarial, the actual data that Mr. Meyer has in the memo was prepared last October. The date of consolidation might have been 6 months forward, assuming a January 1, 2013 date, and it didn't run in the fall. I've never died, but it would cost several thousand dollars to renew the actuarial evaluation, so it's likely there wasn't a material change, and I can't speak for the city, but I think the city understands that if there's a cost, they'll have to pay for the tariff. There'd be no subsidy from the tariff line or from the state anyway. It's Paramount, the city of Paramount would pay the full cost of consolidation. It would really be responsible for any future costs that you take and interest rate assumptions. So there's no public subsidy beyond what's in the finance authority. Sorry, I think you can actually write that. Thanks, Chair. Are we done?
Definitely.
Are we done?
Yeah, it sounds like they have completed the presentation. Yes.
Okay.
Thanks,
Chair. I'm sorry, having the experience of the last couple of years, last year in particular. The only question I had was the level of approval subject, which is discussed in paragraph number 4 of Mr. Martin's memo. Just make sure we have some indication that the city of Fairmont is part of the proposed legislative approval. And then I'm also wondering, Mr. Chair, how the paper board in the Minneapolis and Police and Fire, there does the paper board approval process as well.
We'll call on this guy to speak to Mr. Zarlow. The Police Relief Association Board has passed from a resolution requesting the consolidation, and the Fairmont City Council also has passed a similar resolution supporting consolidation in the interest of the county.
I think Mr. Burke details that this is more the way whether you would require local approval of the city in the membership vote, depending on the circumstances, the legislature is either ordained it directly or have a local approval. In this case, it's hoped that the consolidation will take place before June 30th of this year. If there was a local approval process included, then when you schedule the city council meetings and membership meeting, it might be difficult to get to that date. And another issue that the council might typically consider is precedent, given that this is the last of the weekends on whatever you did, you know, that you have to worry too much about what the precedent would be because of whether you would be anyone else to follow it once it's built up. So that's a long way of saying, I think, that a recommendation would be that if you make it effective, I think there's been some talk about it either at the end of May or the end of June before the fiscal year, without any further action by the city or by the Greenup Association members, and they've got plans for that. So I don't think it holds me that it's not going to approve.
Thanks.
All right.
I just understand that they come up with all the $500.
Senator Rosen,
you probably should have your big motion to do.
Yeah, and it's tricky that I'm in is the technical amendment. But it's a lucky move by Senate Prop. What else about? Excuse me. 2028. Or possible to win the numbers. But to Senator Dibble's comments, I think those are very valid. There is a list of copies of letters of intent from the City Council and votes that were taken, and certainly supply those. This is as Mr. Rice said, the last of the weekends there, but very good meeting with everybody at the table about this. There was a question at the meeting for Mary Ann, and she verified that with Mr. Cooper about the cause of the date. It's for the clean night. He said that would be no problem to do that. So I do believe with the good work that we did in this new last year, we got the emergency taken care of, and it's time to take care of this last one meeting. I do think it's somewhat humorous. It's in my hometown. It's always good to see my city administrator and my other constituent work there here. But I think we've done due diligence, and it's time to move. It's with that. I'd like to move it to the main island annual pilot members. It's a new packet. And basically, I believe it is.
Thank you.
legislation, they will call on their person to speak to us. What about that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Rebecca Adams, State Auditor, and my bill in front of you, I'm going to give you the quick 30,000 with you about why it's in front of you. The 2010 omnibus retirement bill required the Office of the State Auditor to convene a group of representatives from local public pension plans to study public pension investment-related provisions, authorities, and limitations under Minnesota law, because there was interest from several groups to do that. The group consists of 10 people. We have representatives from SBI. We had input from the Pension Commission staff to provide us with resources if we had questions in various local public pension plans. We posted notices for public meetings, and they were open to the public. We also, within the room, had investment brokers, pension plan consultants, and members of the public, and they all were able to share their thoughts, suggestions, and experiences. We had 4 meetings between August and November of 2010, and we went over the statutes, and I think the bill that is before you is a pretty good piece of legislation. All the pieces in this bill, with all the stakeholders at the table, received unanimous consent. The proposed changes will result in improved compliance with investment statutes, enhanced protection of public pension funds, and statutes that are more user-friendly and up-to-date. It's going to be easier for the auditors to audit these plans. It's going to be easier for the investment brokers to successfully invest the money. It will be easier for the board administrators to be successful as well, because none of them like ratifying things if they've done something wrong. But that's a good thing. And most of the current investment laws have not been updated for several decades, so it was necessary. There was antiquated language of investment vehicles that are no longer in existence. Something important to recognize, too, is that the proposed changes also pose some loopholes that allow voluntary founding associations to invest in speculative investments, like short and ultra-short mutual funds, and place additional limitations on equity investments. And that's all I want to say for now. But it was a good process, and it was a very constructive conversation. And this will make these statutes a lot more user-friendly for everyone involved.
Any questions for Senator Ryan? Thank you very much, President Ryan. And President Ryan, would you please be sure to thank you?
I'm interested in the expanded list plans that give an explicit authority to invest in junk bonds.
Mr.
this is just a clarifying amendment so that there is no question when we are on justice for scripture.
Short sales. In other words,
it does authorize very explicitly the use of junk bonds for limitless or established plans. So that's 4A through 7A. If you're uncomfortable with that full extension, you could remove that 4A from limitless plans, established volunteer fire plans, or some combination of two. The 8A through 10A, amendments take a different tact if you want to go again. Rather than totally prohibiting these types of investments for some portion of the investment operations out there, what you could do is try to restrict them to the better quality range of junk bonds. There is an attachment to your memo, and that would be attachment B, as far as on page 17. On the very bottom of the page is a chart. Perhaps the easiest way to follow is on the far right. First part of the column is product. Below that is high grade, upper medium grade, lower medium grade. So those four grades, prime, high grade, upper medium grade, lower medium grade, those are investment grade bonds. Anything in those categories. Not an investment grade speculative is the beginning of the junk bond range. But it goes, turn the page, it goes to further down to bonds that are highly speculative, ones with substantial risk, extremely speculative, in default or near default. So one approach is rather than trying to restrict some portion of the investment programs out here from prohibiting them from using junk bonds is to adopt one of those amendments that I just mentioned. It's under the right, you can use it within the limitations of the bill, and under the bill, they are restricted to no more than 5% of the portfolio. But perhaps it would be appropriate to limit them just to the better quality junk bonds. This would avoid the real misleading of stuff. And I, in the memo, I think I do give an example of some of the stuff that is highly speculative. That's on page 3, page 5, rather, in the memo, about the middle. So about the Goldman Sachs high yield fund. This was not an effort on my part to try to find the worst of the speculative funds out there. I have a friend who's a retired teacher who is a very conservative investor. She told her investment advisor that she wants to invest in bonds because she doesn't trust stocks. But the investment advisor that ran it for her was this Goldman Sachs high yield fund. I took a look at it, you read the what say about the rates of return here. This is a fund that is invested in the very bottom of the investment fund grades and is taking some very speculative actions within those grades. If you're in it in that better quality of junk bonds, the returns to that junk bond portfolio would be a few percent less than an investment grade bond portfolio in really bad times. It would be a few percent more in good times. But this particular portfolio was up about 50% in 1 year, and 8% return in bonds, and down 29%, 28% another year. for SPI could actually have been invested 100% in stocks. So one of the things that is done in this bill is to clarify that that 85% limit applies to all of the investments that come in the market. Perhaps you want to do something with that limit. Investments for the transition amendment or amendments, which are for the very bottom there. The first one would like to set a date other than June 30th, 2013 for compliance. And the 18A amendment was supposed to do, unfortunately, it's a bit misdirected. We could clean it up with the verbal amendment if needed. That amendment would have allowed you to do that. Set a different date. If it turned out that there actually are pension organizations out there who are exceeding the 85% cap, you could use an amendment to say that you have until 2013 to be in general compliance and make new provisions, but if you are exceeding that 85% cap, we want you to bring that down sooner. There are several possibilities here. None of them is critical, in my view, because there are really good safeguards in the bill. There's the junk bond authority. There's a language in the bill saying you can't do this with more than 5% of your portfolio. So you can't feel that sufficient. Exchange traded funds, you can't feel it's not good. You have concerns to move that to the future.
My understanding was that everything in this bill had consensus. this, and they were listening on the family, which doesn't always happen. So, and I think, you know, RI in our office is always to be, you know, conservative with these funds to make sure we don't have any problems. But these plans, you know, these trustees are fiduciaries, and the executive directors of plans are fiduciaries. And so they have to exercise a fiduciary duty that's part of their job. And so I hope that answers your question. But, you know, some of the amendments could create issues. So I, if it, you determine, decide to pursue the amendment, let me know how it would impact some of the funds. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Mayor, on this chart with the bond credit ratings, is this a chart that's readily available to people that are investing in, or to groups that are investing in, so they know which ones are high grade and which ones are low grade? Or not best of three?
This is widely known, widely available. This chart thank you.
think while we're on the subject of that, I was reading here on page 18, the recent debate over the debt rating system and the subprime mortgage issue. I think this is really an important subject, and if folks are investing public money, it should be a more secure. We shouldn't chase the return to the extent that we take an excessive risk. And I think the purpose of either SBI or the Pension Commission is to help determine what that may be. That's been in the spirit of SBI all the way along by Bell's portfolios to be careful about them and having some parameters on that. If they're not there now, I think it's difficult to get that to a mutual fund though, but I think it is possible and a criteria. But that lest we be overconfident in even the high quality in the subprime situation, you realize the highly rated structured securities were suddenly revealed to be of very questionable value. So I don't think we should ever get absolutely comfortable, but I think as far as it is a prudent decision making, but I think we put some parameters on that to make sure that they don't go far too far outside the box. It seems like a good thing to at least put some parameters there in the spirit of public money criteria that we want.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following along with Representative Kipler just said, I guess I want to better understand the 3A amendment, who created it, and refer to what Mr. Burrick said. It sounded to me like he was talking about good junk and bad junk, and in my view, they're both junk. So, it's a concern. Because as fiduciaries, we have it's an important role that we play to make sure that these investments are done properly. And the volunteer fire plans are not supervisor management, Mr. Becker, as I understand. So the 3 amendment is something that I would like to explore. I think that may be an appropriate measure. But I need to learn more about who created it and why, and just explore that a little bit. I think that may be a measure we want.
Okay, Mr. Picker, I think that you're very good to address the questions that have been raised. Chairman, in other words, I think I should try to clarify a few things. I mean, exchange really points. But they are basically a share. ETFs are now about 1/3 of the volume on the New York Stock Exchange. These are very liquid securities. They are used by everybody in the investment business. The reality is, again, that a volunteer relief association buying a couple of shares of the ETF could be a better market exposure and buy very cheaply, very efficiently. So exchange-traded funds are a vehicle that is very much endorsed by the market. It's being done by large investors, small investors, and they are a very appropriate, in my opinion, vehicle for all 50 funds throughout the United States. Again, just the reason we have it in here that the State Board of Investment could purchase ETFs with just that consistency between our statutory authority and the studies of the first class. We already can buy them because it says we can buy securities traded on an exchange. So we already have the authority, we're just cleaning it up for consistency purposes. But exchange traded funds are very, very appropriate for all of the pension organizations throughout the state of Minnesota. As long as I know what ETF to buy, having there are some ETFs that have been traded for various bonds and more. But the vast majority of them, you may have seen ads on TV for spiders. Okay? Now I'm going to get a pirate spider. The reality is it's not just a way for somebody to go buy the S&P 500 index fund at almost no cost and immediately.
state or somebody that's here absolutely hates and think is just terrible, or anyone that, oh, yes, we need this, my little group or my group or my investments absolutely need this. Come and tell us, and we can talk about it with a little more timeliness and so forth. But certainly thank Mr. Burt for bringing these to our attention. There's new stuff in here that I hope will come. And so I appreciate bringing that up.
Okay, what we're going to do is hold this over. And if any of you have a particular amendments or discussions that you want to have, let us know and we'll schedule that. And we'll come back to this issue later.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I would like to hear the state auditors on some of these amendments too. I believe that would be great to hear their feedback.
I don't know if Hunter, have you seen this list of, okay.
Mr. Chair, for the resident of the Murphy, we have the amendments, and we're happy to send you feedback on the amendments. One thing, like, we're not doing it, they're really an issue. Some of them are great issues. So we'll let you know. Okay, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll look at this discussion to future meeting. Thank you. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda. It is House File 1167, Senate File 1182. Representative Smith was not able to be here. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1167.
It's perfect, sir.
I looked at it, and it looks like we're adding two conversations on the current 2022.
The chair of members, the commission always used to consider these privatizations one at a time. We would tend to have several of these each year. The commission developed a certain procedure, standards, which, if those standards were satisfied, the commission was always approving the particular privatization. A few years back, given that there had been this really standard procedure that had been developed, the commission and the legislature revised the law so that from that point forward, the information would be presented to PARA, the Public Employees Retirement Association. They would review the actuarial work to see if the standards were met, the standards that the commission had established. And the standards were that, first of all, some party other than the commission that had the pension fund had to be willing to pay for the actuarial work. And second, that the actuarial work showed that the privatization, if we were to put this into Paris privatized employee chapter, the actuarial work had to indicate that Paris would not suffer a loss as a result of public action. So since that practice was put into law, the last few years, Paris has been coming forward with the privatizations which meet those standards. And that's what this particular bill is. It would add senior care centers in Dillon County and Traverse Care Center in Traverse County to Paris privatization chapter. This is a recommendation from Paris because these two organizations have submitted the actuarial work, paid for the actuarial work, and it demonstrates that PARA will not be harmed. Copies of the actuarial work are included here. It's part of the plan, taking a look
state law criteria and increases and other things like that. So when we, if we would be in this case, what would be governing those? I just want to make sure that we treat all employees and everybody that comes in the same fashion. We don't have any special rules to follow, so we don't have complexity.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelly, this is a special provision for local unit employees who work, and it clearly affects nursing home or hospital employees. And when their governance structure changes, so that the city of Kelly no longer governs them, they can't get over by that nonprofit, they can't stay in there. So Chapter 353F gives them a this
referring to as the deity of heaven, which is a great thing, but it's something that just kind of pure on the so we can address those are more than close to enough.
Please quickly understand it. Can you explain what I'm trying to say? The one group, the University of Minnesota Hospital, again, there is no additional contribution required. Once they are no longer covered, it is what is referred to as an actuarial gain. When they're no longer covered, if we have assumed from the covenant until they get to retirement, we need a gain from that. And this then is part of that gain, or giving them a little bit better termination benefit. But they're no longer actively accruing service. Nobody, neither regular or employer, making contributions once they privatize.
Support of Senator Rosen. sister Lee, a hospital clinician in the state of Virginia, as they look at alternatives to look at a sustainable model for healthcare for that community. And this community is no different than a lot of others that public owned facilities that have had to privatize or look at the option of privatizing as they have looked at forming relationships with affiliations with Title I state communities. In Virginia, the situation has been very challenging in the last 3 years, prior to last year.
Minnesota statute, section 353A. So we're here today to do this to actually have that bill and make the consolidation permanent. But I think I can, at this point, turn over to the representative and I can't do anything that we have left. So,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Martin, we can't, we can write on my emails that you
obviously has done well. He had that 2010, which most recent actuarial work that I have, there were 8 service pensioners, 1 disabilitant, and 5 surviving spouses. That totals to 14 now. If there's not one I've seen, I don't know if that was service pensioner or disabilitant or a survivor, but that was the breakdown as of the end of 2010.
What was the first term?
8. 8, 1, and 5.
And I believe it's survivors.
Yeah.
So we will hold over this, pick this up again at another meeting. Members, we're at the 7 o'clock hour, and as I said, I want to respect that. The last item we have, Representative Kahn and Senator Dibble, is it okay if we carry that over?
Honored to Roy Haley, and have them both here on that account. It's very
possible inclusion on this bill. And members, is just as a reminder, we will have an opportunity to pick up bus file 5055 file 927 again after you've had a chance to look more closely at the various amendments that were drafted. And then we'll come back and deal with the 3A amendment in the last bill. And that was next, the next meeting is the 14th. And my intent of talking with Mr. Martin is to have us focused on, again, on the two key issues we spent a lot of time on last fall, namely the interest rate assumption. We have to at least one bill on that at this point, and also discussion on the potential of hybrids. And so we're going to focus on that, and there may be some other items that we add to the agenda, but that's the plan for the 14th. Yes, we will keep our meetings to 2 hours so that if you can still get the internet and decent hour, 5 to 7 on each of them, Wednesday or Tuesday.